From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. If you are listening for good news in the COVID-19 battle, consider this. That projection of 100,000 to 240,000 deaths in the U.S. has been revised downward. This is from the IHME, that University of Washington model. It is now showing 82,000 deaths projected in the United States between now and the beginning of August. We have been hearing good news from New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. However, New York State just says that it recorded 731 new coronavirus deaths Tuesday, and that marked the biggest one-day jump in the outbreak, according to the governor. So the news continues to be mixed. What is clear is that ventilators are a key resource. A ventilator is the breathing machine that can save the life of someone with COVID-19. And yesterday, at this time, California's governor was announcing that the state had added 500 ventilators from California to the national stockpile. And in his press conference at noon, he explained why.
We've talked about ventilators, the 500 ventilators. One of the reasons we felt more confident in our ability to extend a hand on ventilators and send them back east is because the hospitals themselves that originally had an inventory of 7,587 vents, today have currently 11,036 vents. So they went from 7,500 to over 11,000 over the course of the last few weeks. That's on the basis of repurposing or refurbishing old vents and also procuring new vents. That has put less strain and pressure on the state's effort to procure additional ventilators. Make no mistake, though, we are full force going around the world to procure even more ventilators and continue to work with companies on bridge ventilators like the ones we've been talking about.
So that was Governor Newsom at noon yesterday. Then a few hours later in President Trump's press briefing, he acknowledged what the governor and California had done.
And I want to thank Governor Gavin Newsom, who's doing a tremendous job, who's announced California will send 500 ventilators to be distributed to other locations. I think some are going to Arizona. Some are going to Washington, D.C. We think they're going to Delaware. We're working it out. But 500 excess ventilators from the state of California, and we're going to get them taken care of wherever they have to go.
So let me shift you now to the county level. This afternoon, we are expecting an update from Sacramento County with what should be an extension of the public health order that was set to expire today. That's the preview we've been given. The county is saying of the 462 positive COVID-19 cases, most are in the 18 to 49 age range. Anyone with mild to moderate symptoms now, meaning the fever, dry cough, fatigue, sometimes shortness of breath, can go to a website to be screened for testing. That website is projectbaseline.com. So it's www.projectbaseline.com. And you will hear more news about that later on today, as well as another press conference by Governor Newsom live at noon. Today is World Health Organization, and in a global sense, that is the group that guides global health response to partners in the United Nations. The anniversary of the founding of the WHO is today. It goes back to 1948. The story, of course, continues to be global. On the phone right now with us is Alice Olstein. She's a healthcare reporter for Politico. Hi, Alice. Glad you could join us on Insight.
Thanks so much.
So in mentioning the WHO, we have countries trying to navigate with each other through this pandemic. But if you bring it down to the United States, we have this vivid example of governors trying to manage their states and then vying with the Trump administration for resources and kind of a placement in all. And that's something you've been reporting on over the past 3 weeks. How have the dynamics evolved?
So I think we are still seeing what we have been seeing for several weeks, which is that in the absence of a coherent national strategy to acquire all of this needed equipment, whether it's ventilators, as you mentioned before, or just masks for healthcare workers, because there's no coordinated federal response here. States are going alone and trying to both manufacture the needed equipment, trying to just buy it on the open market, often for exorbitant costs because places are, you know, taking advantage of the pandemic. And the states are having to bid against each other and bid against the federal government and other countries for this equipment. We have seen the national stockpile. Some distributions have come from there, but they've been small, less than what many states have requested. They've sometimes contained faulty or expired equipment, and there just isn't enough there. The stockpile has been underfunded for many years, which is something we've also reported on.
You've also focused on exactly what that stockpile is or isn't expected to be. It's become much more of a necessary resource than maybe the design was in the first place.
So it has evolved over time, and it changes and updates were made after some of the past outbreaks we've experienced in the U.S. with Ebola, with the H1N1 flu, and there has been this reassessment. And yes, it was not intended for this kind of national prolonged emergency. It's more intended for things that are like a natural disaster in one area and to be able to manage the response there.
The president has continued to resist the idea of the national, you called it a strategy, but even stronger than that, some sort of directive to the states or a managing of the bigger picture. As you speak to governors, would governors have wanted that in place, the national strategy that was more directed by the federal government?
A lot have said yes, absolutely. And those who have not criticized the administration are clearly taking their cues from the administration. So still today, we have more than half a dozen states that have not put a shelter in place or a lockdown order. And those that waited a long time before implementing it directly said, you know, we were going off the federal government's signals. And because they didn't signal that this was necessary, we didn't do it. And many public health experts say that is going to contribute to more spread of the virus and pain down the road. When the Trump administration ultimately just recently said, you know, we recommend that all states do it, they didn't require it, but they recommended it, that's when you saw states like Florida that had been resistant eventually put in this statewide order, Georgia as well.
Let me shift you, Alice, to a discussion of hydroxychloroquine, because the New York Times is reporting that the president has a small interest in the company that makes a brand version of hydroxychloroquine. And you've reported on this drug, and people have repeatedly pointed out how much he has seemed to endorse, support, be hopeful, push it. In any event, it gets mentioned in nearly every press conference. Have you been involved or seen the reports regarding his link to the drug maker?
So I think what a lot of people need to know about this is that this is a drug that is manufactured by various companies, not just the one that was indicated to be of a financial interest to the president. I think that this administration has been hyping this drug as of an easy solution to hope. And look, the evidence is just not there that this is a solution. There have not been rigorous scientific studies of this. Just because it's been approved to treat one illness doesn't mean it will be effective at all for another illness. And while the president keeps saying, there's no risk, no risk, what do you have to lose, he said, there very well could be a risk. There could be side effects. We don't know how the drug interacts with people who have this new virus. And so there should be a lot of caution in studies going on right now. Also, this is not the only drug that is in clinical trials at the moment as therapeutic for this. There are other ones as well. So I think that there should be a lot and a lot of caution around these claims coming from the administration right now.
On this program, Alice, we spoke to a couple. The wife in this couple found that the hydroxychloroquine brand Plaquenil that she had been taking for 40 years for arthritis was no longer available at her pharmacy. And in the process of the president's repeated mentions and perhaps the hopefulness of what this treatment might be, what this drug might be able to do, it seems that there has been a gathering or stockpiling. I'm not sure what the correct word is at this point, but unfortunately, it seems less available to people who might still need it. Tell me more about what you know about the movement of the drugs that he continues to mention.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The president's hyping of this drug for this unproven use has led to shortages for its documented effective uses. People who really do need it and depend on it for various conditions have had difficulty obtaining it, as you said. And so not only is there a risk for people taking it for a use that it was not designed for and hasn't been thoroughly tested for, there's the risk of people who depend on it for conditions that it has been proven effective for. So again, there should just be a lot of caution here. Almost every press briefing, the president has taken the opportunity to promote this drug. We have observed the health officials who are up there on the podium with him have at some time stepped in and said, you know, this has not been thoroughly tested. We do not want to give false hope. But we've also seen them, you know, sort of sidelined in this discussion. Really, the president's ear has often been bent by advisors and people in the media, obviously a big fan of Fox News, which has been promoting this drug quite a bit. The information has not always come from scientific expert sources to the president's ear.
So, Alice, you are a healthcare reporter for Politico. Where are you going next with the story? We have these up and down numbers moving in New York and a number of places hitting the peak in their surge. What's the next story you're working on?
Sure. So we've been looking at counties across the United States that are at risk of seeing their health care system overwhelmed. And I think while so much attention has been New York, California,
well, I think we're losing you, Alice.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. So just start again. Counties across the country that are at risk of losing their...
Oh, sorry, yes. At risk of having their healthcare systems overwhelmed, because even if the raw number of cases in those counties is relatively small, their healthcare resources are also relatively small. Some of these counties don't have any hospital at all. Some of them have hospitals that don't have any ICU beds. And you're seeing a surge in cases in these states. Now, this connects back to our previous conversation. A lot of these are in states that only recently ordered these social distancing measures. They were sort of lagging behind the rest of the country on that. And so we are looking at, you know, we looked at some counties in Louisiana that are seeing a huge surge across a lot of the South and Southeast. And I think that one issue, so you mentioned earlier how California, and this also was true of Washington State, has been sending ventilators back to the federal government and to other states that need it more. And the president has praised that, and obviously that will be a big help. But I think if there aren't one or two major hotspot areas, if there are just a scattering, just dozens of hotspots across the country, that sort of hot potato with ventilators is not going to be a comprehensive solution.
Yeah, it's interesting. California's governor mentioned in one of the recent press conferences, California alone has more than 8,800 hotspots, small areas that are hotspots. So multiply that by all the different states, and it's a huge game of chase right now. So, Alice, I really appreciate that you could join us this morning. Thank you for the conversation, and I look forward to talking with you again on Insight.
Sure, anytime. Thank you.
That is Alice Olstein. She's a healthcare reporter for Politico. So here are a few follow-ups to yesterday. Britain's prime minister, you might know, is still in ICU, not on a ventilator, though, we understand. President Trump said yesterday in his briefing that there had been a meeting or a conversation about an offer of experimental treatments, but there was no follow-up and no update yet today. Wisconsin's primary is happening. The state's Democratic governor tried to delay it because of stay-at-home orders. His special session effort failed over the weekend. Then yesterday afternoon, he did issue an executive order to delay the primary until June. They are in a stay-at-home directive, but the Wisconsin State Supreme Court overturned the executive order. People are voting at the polls today. My 80-year-old mom is going to go out to her polling place. I'll hear that story at the end of the day. So the question becomes, when might all of this be normal again? What will normal be? Will we get back to normal? In the president's briefing yesterday, Dr. Anthony Fauci fielded that question.
If back to normal means acting like there never was a coronavirus problem, I don't think that's going to happen until we do have a situation where you can completely protect the population. But when we say getting back to normal, we mean something very different from what we're going through right now. Because right now we are in a very intense mitigation. When we get back to normal, we will go back gradually to the point where we can function as a society. But you're absolutely right. I mean, if you want to get to pre-coronavirus, you know, that might not ever happen in the sense of the fact that the threat is there. But I believe with the therapies that will be coming online and with the fact that I feel confident that over a period of time we will get a good vaccine, that we will never have to get back to where we are right back now. So if that means getting back to normal, then we'll get back to normal.
Something to think about. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about COVID-19 at the Bronx Zoo in New York. We're going to explore that story about the tiger infected with coronavirus. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.